This week, a rare piece from 1923 that lays out the importance of the public school system and why Freemasons should support it. Illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison stops in for an all-new Masonic Minute. How are you getting your Freemasonry now that we can't meet? We wrap it up with two pieces of Masonic fiction, a St. John's Day haunting. We'll wrap it up with a trip to the Old West and view the craft through the eyes of the square and compasses. Stay dialed in.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode number 438. Welcome back to the show. As you heard about in the top of the show there, we've got a great show for you this week. I got some great feedback from the Arthur Edward Waite episode last week. In the news, I did want to go ahead and mention that the all-new Fraternal Review issue will be coming out shortly here in the next few weeks. And I'm really excited about it. They chose a odd topic, Fight Club and Freemasonry, where the entire issue was themed around the movie Fight Club and the book, and we explored what that meant to the Masonic fraternity in terms of masculinity and things, and they asked me to do a piece for it, so I went ahead and I wrote something, submitted it, and they edited a little bit of it because, of course, there's some strong language and things within the film, but they took it, and it looks like they're running with it, so I'm excited to see that. I have read the articles in advance, the entire issue, and I can tell you, normally the magazine is condensed to the 16 pages, but they really felt that they didn't want to cut too much out, so 20 pages this issue, it's going to be great. So if you would like to get in on that, go to theresearchlodge.com. Also in the news, last week we just did an episode on Manly P. Hall, and really interesting kind of article, and perhaps that's going to be an occult profile series in itself, but what I would love to do in an upcoming episode, what I did in the last episode of the Masonic Roundtable was I broke out some short pieces from this letter that Manly P. Hall's wife wrote about his death. There's actually three great articles about the death of Manly P. Hall that I would love to read, and I just have to get permission to do so because they are from a magazine, respectively, and a news organization. So I'll get that, and maybe we can put together a cool episode on Manly P. Hall. Let me know what you think. Send me an email at wcypodcast@gmail.com. All right, the big news this week is Ezekiel Bates Lodge Masonicon 2020, originally scheduled for just a few weeks from now, is not canceled. I repeat, is not canceled. It is, however, rescheduled. The new date is August 21st. Now, everything else is staying the same. It's just a new date, August 21st. We're pushing it back. Worshipful brother Brian Simmons is doing all of the logistics, and you can bet your bottom dollar this is a massive headache. However, it is what we need to do to make sure that this convention still happens because it is important on so many levels. We're still very, very excited about this. In a statement released to the Masonicon 2020 Facebook page. Quote, good morning. The Masonicon 2020 team has been monitoring the current health situation and has had discussions with our Grand Master, and we have decided it is in the best interest of all to reschedule Masonicon 2020 to August 22nd, 2020. This may be a blessing in disguise. Masonicon 2020 will be the kickoff event for the new Masonic year. I am sure, like us, you want this year to be in the rear view. If you cannot attend, your ticket can be refunded or transferred. The events of the day before and after will change, and that information will be relayed as soon as it is set. We thank you for your understanding and apologize for any inconvenience this may cause. Sincerely, Ezekiel Bates Lodge. Now, as a member of Ezekiel Bates Lodge, I stand behind this statement as well. This is totally unavoidable. If you all understand that things are happening in the world today that you know, unprecedented for this day and age. So just a word to you to remember, go into your schedules and change that date ASAP. Now, the date in Facebook for the Facebook event has already been changed. So if you rely on that, it's already been updated in your phone automatically. Also, next piece of news I have is there's a new Facebook group. If you're like me, you're in tens of them. I think I'm in like 54 different Facebook groups, and I don't monitor them all. Much of the time, I get pulled in to offer support or because people want me to share things in them, and that's generally what I do. But there is a new one out that is called Refracted Light. Now, the idea refracted, reflected, right, split, maybe light as an education, edification. And the idea here is that in these unprecedented times, there are tons of obviously web things that we can dig into as Masons. However, what about meetings? What about presentations live? You know, there is something there. This is this little thing that we love so much, that live interaction, Q&A, all these things. And the goal of Refracted Light is kind of a repository to share either Zoom links or WebEx or Google Hangouts for whenever somebody is doing a cool presentation on the internet, which will, of course, be broadcast. Now, caveats to this are that these presentations largely are open to the public because we just can't guarantee everything is Master Mason only, Fellowcraft, EA, whatever. So with this Facebook group, there's this ability to put Masonic presentations all together in a group where people can choose the ones they want to go to. I've been asked to assist in this a little bit, so I gave a presentation just recently. It went out on Zoom, and this is a service that's free. It's 100 participants for free on Zoom, and then we can also push to YouTube. And then when it's over, we can either keep it up there for posterity or we can make it private or delete it. So I did my presentation on the Ark and Freemasonry, and that was thanks to Randy Sanders, thanks to Joe Martinez, and thanks to Mike Jarzabek, and also to Ryan Wheaton for really just putting all this stuff together and promoting it. So big thanks to those guys for their mega effort in continuing to step up and bring forth Masonic education in a time when the administration club, you know, meeting in actual buildings and all that is not happening. So really, it's a grassroots movement, and many Masonic lodges and brothers across the world are coming together in this new way, this WebEx virtual fellowship, as it were. Everybody like to rag on guys like Castle Island Virtual Lodge and all of these things, but who's laughing now? Yeah, so this is just a great opportunity in light of the current circumstances. I know we all just can't wait to get back to Lodge and shake some real hands or, you know, bump fists or whatever you all do, but this is the next best thing that we can do to continue Freemasonry, to continue the education, and it's an excellent opportunity to present philosophical and spiritual education in a way that's also open to the public. Don't be surprised if the public latches onto some of these lectures that we're doing for the public and then all in a sudden decides, this Freemasonry thing is what I want. So with that, let's pay the bills and get right into this week's education. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level, You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together, and I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program, and in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, now the first piece this week really is about civics, engagement, the public, kids, education. Now the piece is actually from the Masonic Services Association of America, published in 1923. Now as we read through this, let's think if it's still relevant today, almost 100 years later. But let's dive right in. Fellow stockholders, we are going to discuss for a few moments the greatest business enterprise in which you and I are jointly engaged. It is practically a new business, having been in existence in a nationwide way only about 75 years. The world knew nothing about this business 100 years ago, and some of our colonial fathers scoffed at it as something which, if it could be attained, was not worth the having. As a business, let us analyze it for ourselves carefully. A careful analysis is justified, for this business is one which has greater capital invested than any other enterprise in America. Tremendous amounts of real estate are owned. Great buildings house the shops. There are officers in every city and town in the country. An army of directors and workers is employed. Upon this business is spent the majority of our peacetime taxes. Into its factories goes the most precious material that our nation yields. Out of it comes a product, the value of which far exceeds our production of foodstuffs and manufacturers combined. This business, fellow stockholders, is the American public school system. The product of this factory is the education of our children, your boys and girls and mine. Upon this product depends the future of America. We, as a people, invest more money in it than in anything else in which we are interested. The system is a corporation, and you and I own and operate it. When we consider that the high school enrollment jumped from 915,000 to 1.6 million in 8 years, and that only a little more than 75 years ago there were no high schools in the entire world, we begin to understand how gigantic an enterprise it is, and how rapidly it is growing. It is from these points of view that we want to discuss the public school system. Your child goes through the public school, how does he come out?
You pay more actual dollars and cents for the maintenance and upbuilding of the public school than you do for any other piecework that you are interested in as a taxpayer. What dividends do you get back? Your child is graduated from your high school, and what sort of a job does he get? More important still, what kind of job do they hunt for? We have the right of any stockholder to see what we are getting out of our money. We are going to give credit for every bit of constructive work that enters into the product. We are going to change every item which properly belongs on the debit side of the ledger. We are not going to admit that our efforts have been in vain these 75 years. We are not going to indict the management except as we shall find ourselves wanting. Let us begin our survey. The community in which we live has invested thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars in our plant. Yet that plant is idle more than three-fourths of the time. We admit that it should be idle a part of the time, perhaps a little more than half. But when the plant operates on a 30-hour-a-week schedule for only 36 weeks, is it just to say, as stockholders, that the idle time is out of proportion to the working hours? We are not saying that the children and their teacher should put in 8 hours a day, 12 months a year. We are talking about our plant, the buildings. Are we using them efficiently? Someone may say that they are specially constructed, that they are not adaptable to the production of other things. Are we so sure? Could they not be so adapted? Then let us consider the managers, superintendents, and foremen. They are the faculty, assuming that they are proficient. How about the way we handle them? Would you permit half or more of your foremen and responsible officers to shift from one plant to the other every year? Would you expect them to be satisfied and happy in an environment where they were unable to become acquainted with their neighbors until the year was up, or practically so? Would you care to have a business in which all your skilled operatives were changing every 3 years? Yet this is what happens to your teachers. A large percentage of them shift from place to place at the end of the school year. They know little of the community in which they teach until the school year is ended. Does this kind of organization develop proficiency? The recent war brought out the woeful lack of even the most elementary education in most young men of the draft age. The percentage of illiteracy was found to be disgracefully high. Our government had to spend billions in training young men to understand and obey orders. We paid an immense price to give elementary education to these adults. Is it sound business sense to allow the next generation to come out of the schools as ignorant as these adults? As good as our public school system is, we find that there is a tremendous economic waste in its administration. Viewed from a business standpoint, can we afford to let this go on? The public school system ought, in any balanced scheme of things, to link up very definitely, not only with higher education, but with the home business and community life. Failing in this, there is an economic waste. The percentage of business and professional failures is an index of our school system. The percentage of failures is too high. No self-respecting citizen, no stockholder in this great corporation of ours needs to be told that the ideals of educated men and women must more and more be made the ideals of all our people. This is what we ought to mean when we speak of Americanism. No thinking man or woman owning a share in this company can fail to realize that the cost of education is a productive expenditure of money, that it will pay enormous dividends, and that in no sense of the word is it a charity. It needs no argument to prove that the public school is not a place where political, religious, or educational axes are to be ground. There should be no argument to prove that every one of us must understand and appreciate the value of the public service rendered by teachers. They should know us and mix with us and acquire a practical knowledge of the problems of life which we face and which our children must face. And it is infinitely more important that we know the teachers into whose care we entrust our children. It is worthwhile, from a dollar and cent standpoint, for us to cultivate them, entertain them in our homes, and make them feel that they are being relied upon and that they can rely upon us. We have spoken of Americanism. What does it mean? What should it mean to our children? From this standpoint, what are the real needs of the public school? Americanism means equality of opportunity. We live in no feudal age. There are no barons or lords of the manor who hold us as chattels. Each man and woman is a human soul entitled to a fair chance. Inevitably, we are bound to each other by the ties of brotherhood, and the future of our America depends upon the growing of every boy and girl into a healthy, happy, competent manhood and womanhood, able to cope with those conditions that a citizen must face. Our public school system should fit children to take advantage of their opportunities and so make of themselves all that ambition and thrift and character may hope to attain. Universal education, more than anything else, must be the goal of our republic. Upon this rest the foundations of government, for only through intelligent citizens can our government continue in the years to come. The ban of factory production is returned goods, goods which have been improperly manufactured and are sent back to be worked over. Do we realize that there can be returned goods in our schools? Have we ever stopped to think that it costs as much to put a child through the same grade twice as it does to put two children through once? Everything which helps the child to learn quickly is real economy. Only if a child is healthy will they do the required work. Otherwise, will we hold back his classmates as well as himself? Health becomes the greatest possible economy, and if there were no other grounds for asking that supervision of health be excised over all children, this would be enough. Our public schools can succeed only in proportion to the corporation which they receive from the community. We have spoken of effective organization. If this is demanded by the community, we shall get the worth of our money. If a community demands teachers who believe in public education at state expense, the demand will be supplied. If the people of a community are determined that American ideals shall be instilled into their minds of their children, rather than the vaporing of foreign agitators, the schools in that community will have truly American teachers. In return for all this, the community must do its part. We must give the teacher a place among us. He or she must feel at home with us because they come into our homes. It is necessary for the teacher to know the home background of the child if intelligent direction is to be given. We cannot expect wholehearted work without some measure of appreciation. How long since you have attended any school activities? The enterprises which the teacher promotes in order to show the child how to work with other children fit them for the part they are going to play in mature activity, and are as important as the work of the classroom. The success of these enterprises depends upon your support, not only from the standpoint of the money which is spent, but because the child will have faith in this instruction and will believe in its importance if we, as parents, show them that we also believe. These enterprises are the links in the chain which the teacher offers as a tie between the school and the community. The community must not lose hold of its end of the chain. As individuals, we have three ways in which we can become a constructive force for the betterment of the public schools. We can do it as voters, supporting measures which benefit the public schools and voting against the measures which are opposed to their welfare. We can do it by making our lives touch the lives of those directly connected with our schools. This does not mean working through a committee or an association. It means finding out for ourselves what the schools are doing. It means becoming acquainted with and learning to know the aspirations and the abilities of the teachers who guide the destinies of our children during school hours. Finally, we can give our support as parents. The child is a healthy animal, as a rule, and has very little natural desire for an education. We must show them that the way to success in the world lies down the long road of education. We must make this road reasonably attractive. We must show them that education is their greatest asset. The public school, which brings together the children of the rich and the poor alike, is the one great agency which makes for responsible citizenship. Our children must know that the right to go to a public school has been fought for. They must know what it costs in terms of money and sacrifice, We must realize that on the organization and influence of our public system depends the perpetuity of the Republic.
Several months ago, I wrote a piece for the Midnight Freemasons blog entitled The Meeting. In that article, I speculated what it would be like in the future to visit my lodge and attend a meeting in a virtual reality setting. There I saw old friends who were doing the same thing from afar, and for our Masonic education that night, we got nothing less than a walking tour of La Loge des Neuf Sœurs, the Lodge of the Nine Sisters, as it appeared when Benjamin Franklin was in attendance. While some of the technology needed to do that is available today, it's not at the level I discussed in the article. We'll have to wait a while before we can do things like that. Or will we? Unless you just landed on Earth from a trip to the planet Neptune or some other far-off place in the galaxy, you know that we're living in a strange, historic, and even scary time as this COVID-19 menace, the coronavirus, circulates among us. Many of us live trapped in our residences as we practice social distancing to ward off the disease. We've become a nation of hermits. Every in-person Masonic meeting has been postponed or canceled. The week before this all came to a head, I personally had five Masonic meetings, and that, in the following days, abruptly became zero. You may have had the same experience, and now we're all going through our own series of withdrawal pains. What to do? Well, we're a fraternity of intelligent guys who are well aware of ways to keep up with events, check on our brothers, friends, and their families. This is, after all, the age of social media. We also know ways to keep up with our Masonic education with a number of online facilities like the podcast you're listening to, the Masonic Roundtable, and a host of others. Of course, many of these tools put us in a position of practicing our Masonic craft in isolation. Sometimes this is a good thing, but other times, a little goes a long way. In our quest for brotherly love, relief, and truth, the brotherly love aspect can fall behind if we can't get together. So what about that little foray into science fiction I wrote about a couple of years ago? Brothers, we're just about there. Oh, we didn't take a group tour of La Loge des Neuf Sœurs. But just the other night, I sat down in my office in my own home and attended a meeting hosted by the Scottish Rite in St. Louis. 29 of us got together and heard a presentation and had a discussion about the seventh degree. It wasn't just one brother presenting and the rest listening. It was all of us participating. We may be trapped at home, but there are creative ways for us to get out and share that brotherhood we so crave. My hat's off to my St. Louis brothers for doing this. I understand they plan to make it a regular thing, and I think this kind of thing will catch on. Not only that, this may be a tipping point. I'm guessing these online discussions, facilitated by technologies like Zoom and others, will be here to stay as yet another tool in our quest for Masonic education. The technology is there. It's fairly simple to use. Check it out. Set up your own meeting. It's a good alternative as we weather the storm. Stay safe, brothers, and let's use everything technology offers to keep the social aspects of our fraternity alive for the duration. for the Whence Came You podcast. This is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, the usual million thanks goes out to our brother, illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison, for his always amazing content coming through, for his great work and giving us content every couple weeks. We really appreciate it. If you like these segments, head on over to our YouTube channel where you can subscribe to our videos, like them, all of those things. And when a new video comes out, of course, you get the email on it or you'll get your little notifications. That includes anything with the Masonic Minute. So we publish those also, and Steve puts those videos together for us. So if you would, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on the bookstore, and go ahead and check out some of Steve's books, which we have right there, and you purchase them through us, and there's an Amazon affiliate link, and when you buy through there, we get like pennies, literally, but it's something. So consider supporting us that way. The next piece I have is titled Masonic Education, and it seems to be a couple works of fiction, but let's dive right in. Masonic Education. Modern fiction writers avoid mention of the Masonic fraternity in their writings. Yet, just a few decades ago, we found many authors who recognized the ancient craft as an integral part of the community. Brother Rudyard Kipling, in many of his stories and in many of his poems, found ways to weave Freemasonry into his tales. He was an ardent and active Mason. Brother Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who created the characters of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, was a member of Phoenix Lodge No. 257 in Portsmouth, England. His writings contained many references to Freemasonry. Most worshipful Brother Carl H. Claudy, longtime executive secretary of the Masonic Services Association of America, was probably the most prolific writer of American Masonic fiction. His The Lion's Paw is a delightful novel with a Masonic background. His Masonic plays remain popular. At the turn of the century, many novels contained references to the Masonic Lodge as a focal point in the community, or references to Masons as the outstanding pillars of behavior. Somewhere along the line, either we have lost some of our Masonic luster, or the art of storytelling has become blind to our existence. It was a refreshing experience for the Masonic Service Association to receive the following two gems of fiction for consideration as short talk bulletins. The author, Worshipful Brother William W. Price of Vacaville Lodge No. 134 in Vacaville, California, reports that he had an urge to put some of his feelings and memories into writing. He stated that each contains situations based upon real people and places that have very deep and lasting effects upon his Masonic life. In these stories, their love and dedication for the craft lives again. For your enjoyment and inspiration, we are pleased to share them with you. The Last Stated. It was Friday night, and the wind was blowing, and there was a chill in the air, uncommonly cool for June. The street where the old temple was located was desolate and dark. The aging Tyler took out his keys and opened the large door to the old temple. He turned on the square and compass over the door, and it shone brilliantly in the darkness. He slowly climbed the 27 stairs as he had done for the past 50 years. "It's a stated tonight," he said to himself. "All the brethren will be here, and everything must be in its proper place and station." He opened the door to the paraphernalia room. There was a mustiness which he no longer seemed to notice. The rods of the deacons and stewards hung on the right, the jewels of the officers on hooks on the wall, and the aprons were stored in the old wooden box. Ever so gently he took them out and arranged the lodge with loving care. He then opened the altar, took out the Holy Bible, square and compasses, and laid them so reverently on the altar. He checked the lesser lights, and all three were working. The master always wanted them checked before he opened the lodge, he remembered. He then turned the letter G on and observed that it shone particularly bright tonight. He then turned all the lights off except the G because he always enjoyed looking at it that way. He also turned on the light over the altar even though he knew Grand Lodge didn't approve, but it looks so right, he thought, and smiled to himself. He opened the ledger and entered the date AL 5985, the year of light, and
24th of June, 1985. It was St. John's Day, he remarked to himself. The order doesn't celebrate it as they used to. He clothed himself in his apron and jewel. The cloth was old and faded, and the jewel was dull. He took his sword and sat down by the door to the lodge hall so he could see the bright letter G and the three great lights, and there he waited as he had for all these years, waiting for the brethren. He must have dozed, for he noticed the door to the lodge was closed, but he was tired, very tired. It had not gone well for ancient Landmark Lodge for many years, but he was sure the brethren would come tonight. Wasn't it a stated and St. John's Day? He said to himself. Then he heard from inside the lodge a voice. It was the master saying, "The officers will assume their stations and places. The brethren will come to order and take their seats." The tiler thought out loud, "I'm here, worshipful and brethren, as I have been for all these years." The next day they found the old tiler. He must have passed away in his sleep. They looked into the lodge and saw the bright letter G and the light above the altar burning brightly. "I don't understand what happened here," the investigator said. "This old lodge has been closed for some time." An old mason who was there to inventory the property remarked, "Yes, I know, but this would have been the first time that a stated would have fallen on a St. John's Day in 50 years. It would have been a grand evening. There's something awful strange about this." "What do you mean?" asked the investigator. "Well, this old ledger, it's dated the 24th of June, 1985, and it's full of names of brethren I haven't seen or heard of for years," remarked the old mason. "Strange, very strange," said the investigator. "Well, my job is over, so let's leave. Anyway, the new owners want to get started on their building construction," he added. The old mason turned off the main switch, but observed something was wrong. "Look," he said, "the letter G and the light over the altar didn't go out." "Well, maybe we should just leave them," said the investigator. As they shut the door to the lodge hall and turned to leave, they both thought they heard a voice from within saying, "The officers will assume their stations and places. The brethren will come to order and take their seats." They looked at each other without comment and locked up the old temple and left. The square and compass above the large door of the temple shone brilliantly in the darkness. So mote it be. The Old Square and Compass. It was in the year of our Lord, 1849, AL 5849, The Place, California. It was the time of the gold rush, which beckoned many Masonic brethren with hopes of finding their fortune. About 1850, in the small township of Hiramsburg, sundry brothers requested and received a dispensation for the Grand Lodge of California to form a lodge of free and accepted Masons. The lodge was named Immortality Lodge under dispensation. The membership was comprised of brethren from many jurisdictions, and all had one thing in common. They were Freemasons. Much work and effort went into furnishing the small lodge room located over Jones's hardware store. They needed it all, the volume of sacred law, the two pillars, altar, rods, officer jewels and aprons, and of course the square and compasses. And thus begins our story. We were cast near to the Jenkins Silver Mine, located along the Silverado Trail, which wound its way through the rich Napa Valley. We were placed in a velvet-covered box, transported to Hiramsburg, and presented to the worshipful master, Billy Fritz. It was a joyous evening in Immortality Lodge when, on that first night, we were removed from the box and placed on the volume of sacred law. How we glistened and shined, and it was wonderful seeing the smiles and warmth on the faces of the brethren. It was a great and exciting moment filled with friendship and brotherly love. There was a glow in the lodge hall which only the true Mason can experience, and it made us sparkle even more, for we would forever be a part of the lodge. The speech by the senior master Mason present was eloquent and rhetorical. Brother Herb Sturtridge said, quote, "These instruments, the square and compasses, are ancient to our fraternity, as are all our beautiful furnishings. They are significant in that they represent the working tools of our profession. The square is dedicated to the master, for it is the proper working tool of his office. It teaches us to work together on the square of virtue. The compasses are dedicated to the craft, for by due attention to its use, we are taught to circumscribe our desires and keep our passions in due bounds toward all mankind. So we were at each and every degree and the stated meetings. We were part of every ceremony where the new mason swore to be a good man and true. Thus, under the guiding hand of the all-seeing eye, Immortality Lodge thrived and grew for many years until the village of Hiramsburg saw many changes in those years. The Civil War lost us many good brethren on both sides. The drought of 1879 and 1880 devastated most of the farmland and most moved away. The culture and population took many turns, and for Immortality Lodge, they were all the wrong way. The final blow came on December 27, 1907, when an oil lamp was left burning after a St. John's Day celebration. Much of the old lodge was destroyed. Our beautiful altar, the two pillars, the jewels and aprons were gone. But we were spared. God knows for what. James Harvey, senior warden, found us in the rubble and took us home. The members of the lodge could not raise the money to replace the loss. After 1 year, Immortality Lodge went dark. All the property that remained was turned over to the Grand Lodge, all except for us. James Harvey never became master. He passed away in 1909, and his belongings, along with us, were sold to an antique store in the county seat. There, we have laid for these many years waiting to return to Lodge, waiting for those warm and friendly smiles. Under the dullness, our brilliance still remains, waiting to serve the fraternity who brought us into existence. We hope someday someone will find us. Will it be you, our brother? All right, that's it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed these couple pieces here published quite a long time ago from the Masonic Services Association. As I always do when I read from the MSAs, I want to give them due credit. These are largely old pieces that aren't getting much publication anymore. They're on the internet, and so I would urge you all to check out. I'll have the links that'll go back to these, as well as I'll put them in the app. And please also check out the Masonic Services Association website and their podcast, which reads Short Talk Bulletins as well. And again, in the show notes, we'll have links to all that. Until next week, I hope you guys all are staying busy, keeping your routines, going on walks, doing everything you can do to stay safe and to stay active. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.